Today, we begin a new sermon series called Your Name, a sermon series on the names of God. It's going to be a six-part sermon series studying a few of God's names that he has revealed to us in the Bible. Now, before we begin, I'd like to start a little philosophical and a little just like deep thinking, start right on the deep waters. I want to start with a question. Why do we name things? Why do we give name to things? Or why do we give names to people? Why do you name you have named your kid. I think some of you have named your kid. I have named my kid. But why do we give names to our children? Why do we give nicknames to our friends? What's so significant about the concept of a name? If I just pause here for a second, if you just imagine with me, if there is no such thing as a name, what would happen to people, to relationships? I'm going to try to entertain this thought and this question. Now, I've thought about it for a little bit, and I think there are two reasons or two significance of the concept of a name. Now, during this sort of period of time, this modern era, you know, 19th century, 21st century, 18th century, this time, you and I and people probably have received their names because it was some sort of a wish, some sort of an expectation from our parents. It's probably embodied something that your parents wanted you to be. You can try asking your parents. I asked my parents, and it turns out my Chinese name came from two of the richest men in Hong Kong, and that's their expectation of me, that I was to be rich like the richest man in Hong Kong. Maybe they chose the wrong name, honestly. Maybe for you or for your parents naming you, they wanted you to be successful. They wanted you to be happy. They wanted you to be joyful. They wanted you to be beautiful. They wanted you to be a bunch of things. So your name probably communicates some sort of expectation from the person who named you. Another significance, I believe, of the concept of a name is more relational. It's connection. By knowing somebody or giving something or somebody a name, you are allowed to have access to the person. Your parents named you because then, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later, they can call you down in the middle of the night to help you do the dishes. Names in this modern era, this period of time, is usually carried, I believe, two things. It's expectation from somebody, and it allows you to connect with the person. Now, turns out this concept of a name hasn't been the same since history. You know, when you go a little bit back then to the ancient times, the concept and the idea of a name has evolved just a little slightly. And in particular, I mean this. Instead of the name being a wish of somebody or somebody's expectation on you, it's more like a description of a person. The name is a description of a person. And some would even go as far as to say that the name of a person, it's kind of like a personality profile of a person. That person's name would tell you their story or their character or something about them. And so, for example, the name Moses, you and I know Moses. Moses is the historical figure in the Bible that brought the Israelites out of Egypt. He was given the name Moses because Moses, that word, sounded like the Hebrew to draw out from the water or to rescue from the water. And that is important, that's significant, because that's exactly how he lived his early days. He was born as a baby and he got thrown into the river and somebody rescued him out of the water. Moses told of his birth story. Now, but not only that, Moses would eventually be chosen by God to go deliver the Israelites symbolically out of the Red Sea, out of the water, to be drawn out of the Red Sea. Or more specifically, God would choose him to rescue the Israelites out of the Red Sea, to draw out from the waters. And so Moses didn't just tell of his birth story, it actually told of his story, his life story, his narrative, his profile. And so a person's name in the ancient times is like a personality profile, it's like a resume, it's like a LinkedIn page, an Instagram profile. It's all of those things. And then obviously, secondly, it allows for connection. When you know somebody's name, you have access to them. It's like you have their phone number, you have their DM, you have their social media handle, their Twitter, whatever, the Discord username. It allows you to find them. And so as you can imagine then, names to us is extremely important right now. In the ancient days, even more so for people. Now think about it. How much more important would it be to know the name of a god or a deity or a spirit? Because to know the name of a god is for you to have a grasp of what that god is like. You can encyclopedia ask GPT, what is Ra, the god of the sun, like? You have none of that. You just go by their name. And to have the name, it also allows you to have access to pray to whoever specifically that god is to be. And so name, the concept of name for gods and for deities is extra important in the ancient times. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to explore six names of God, of our God, the Hebrew God, the Christian God, and to find out what those names mean to us and how we can connect with him then. And so the first question that we ought to ask is, well, what is God's name? What is God? And I don't mean that in just like a generic kind of way. What is God's personal name? As in, if he was here today in service, after service, you met him on the side, say, hey, nice to meet you. Is this your first time to church? And he says, yes. And you ask him, what's your name? What is he going to tell you? And the name that we're going to look at, this name, this God's personal name, it's fascinating because this is the first instance recorded in the Bible, the first instance in the Bible where God tells you, this is my name and you should call me by this name. And some scholars would even go as far as to say, this is the name above all names. This is the most important one that we must know. Spoiler alert, is not Jesus. Because we have to go all the way back to the time of Exodus. Just a little brief background. During this time of Exodus, where we're going to look at the passage, there's this group of people, God's people, called the Israelites. Before they went into this place supposedly called the Promised Land, they were spending their time in Egypt. And that is also an interesting story. You should look at Genesis, the end of Genesis, because how they got to Egypt, it was because of a man called Joseph. You heard about Joseph. Joseph helped the Egyptians and the Israelites, and then the king of Egypt at that time, Pharaoh at that time, allowed the Israelites to live in Egypt. But then after many days, the king of Egypt, that Pharaoh, the one who gave favor to the Israelites, that Pharaoh died. And then the people of Israel groaned because why? They fell into slavery, and they cried out for help. Now just stop there for a second. Israelites at this time is in a time of darkness, to put it super lightly. They're in need, they're in difficulty, they're building pyramids, they're enslaved, and they have nobody to help them. Now, think about it. Egypt, if you study ancient Egypt, they have thousands and thousands of gods. Israelites, they have nobody to help them. And as they were crying out, they didn't even know, like scriptures, they even say, they cried out to God, they cried out to who? They just cried out because they were like, we are so lost right now. We are in such trouble in our void. We just need to cry out and ask for help. And turns out their cry went to somebody. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I've heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of Egyptians. And how is he going to do that? He found a man called Moses, and he was to send Moses as his representative. And so he found Moses, and he said to Moses, Moses, come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Who am I? How is the Pharaoh going to listen to me? How is even the Israelites going to listen to me? I left them for 40 years. I'm in the wilderness now. I can't do that. But God said, but I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Then Moses said to God, what if I go to the people of Israel and I tell them, I come on behalf of the God of your fathers? And they said, who the heck are you? Who are you? Why should we listen to you? What is the name of the God? What is the name of your God? If they tell me that, what am I going to say? This is all happening in Moses' mind because he was afraid. He was doubtful. He didn't want to go. These are just imaginary scenarios. What if they ask me about you and I don't know what to say to them? I don't want to go. I'm afraid. I'm like an old man now. Like, what am I? So give me something. Why should I believe in you? Why should they believe in me to believe in you? Why should I trust you? Give me something. I don't want to go. What? Give me something to hold on to. What's your name? What's your name? What's your name? Who are you? What is God's name? God said to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel, Yahweh has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. God says, I am who I am. The word for I am in the Hebrew is ehyeh, meaning to be. But then the tense, the verb tense, you know, past tense, present tense, future tense, the tense of this word is not specified. So you can translate it. In fact, some Bibles will have this translated as I am who I am. Some will have I will be who I will be. I am who I will be. God's like, if you ask me who I am, I'm going to tell you who I am. I am who I am. I can't reference to anything to tell you. I go by myself. I am the God of everything. There is nothing that you can use to compare me. I can't tell you. I can't use any of your words to describe to you what I'm like. I am who I am. But if you really want a name, you really want something to hold on to, here is my name, Yahweh. Is my name. That is the true personal name of God. That is the first instance recorded in the Bible where God tells somebody, this is my name. Now, Yahweh, that word, is related to the phrase before, I am who I am. But Yahweh is in third person. As in, it gets translated as he is or he who is. He is who he is. He will be who he will be. He has the same idea as I am. Now, scholars, when they're looking at this, why did God change from first person to third person? And some people say, well, if Moses went to the people of Israel and said, I am, has sent me to you, that's kind of weird. So people said, maybe God changed it to third person so that Moses can go, he is, he has sent me to you. And so God changed his name just for Moses' sake. But Yahweh has the same idea, same concept as I am. Now, I have to interject a little bit. I have to add a little explanation. Because when you open up the Bible and you go to the website and Command F, Control F, whatever, you try to search Yahweh, Y-A-H-W-H, E-H, you're not going to find that word. Why is that? And in fact, instead, you're going to find another word for Yahweh, the Lord, written in small capitals, the Lord written in small capitals. Now, I don't have time to explain all the history behind it. It's fascinating. You can come to me and I can explain to you later. But I want to know, short form, short version. Yahweh is translated as the Lord in our English language. Because in ancient time, when the Jewish scribes and the teachers were copying the scriptures, they were teaching this, they wanted to honor God's personal name. They wanted to treat it with reverence. Sometimes you do that. You know somebody's first name, but you don't call them by their first name. You call them by something else because out of respect and out of honor. And so whenever they would teach Yahweh, they would substitute it with the word the Lord. Whenever they see the word Yahweh, they would read out the Lord. And so then tradition has it, then it gets passed down and passed down, and eventually it ends up being the Lord in our Bible. So for example, this is why it's significant. The Lord is my shepherd, Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. It's God's name. Yahweh is my shepherd. And also, here's a little second side note now. Sometimes you hear people say Jehovah. Jehovah, again, super short. Jehovah is the same idea. Jehovah is the substitute word for a translation, for a transliteration, and then when it gets to here, it becomes Jehovah. But it has the same idea. It comes back to the same word, Yahweh, I am. Third detour, just a side note now. When you say hallelujah, praise God, Yah, J-A-H at the back, it means Yahweh. It's God's name. You're praising God's name. Hallelujah, that's how you got it. Anyway, Yahweh, Jehovah, the Lord, it all comes from the same idea, the same place. Yahweh, I am. That's the personal name of God. Now, we haven't answered the really important question, which is, what does Yahweh mean? What is the significance of the name Yahweh? Because I am who I am is a little abstract. It's a little hard to understand, is it not? And it is, because when scholars study the name and they just look at the name in itself, it's a bit of a mystery. It's hard for people to understand what exactly did God mean. And because, well, God is God, you can't fully comprehend and explain everything. And so then they have came up with solutions and definitions to try to explain what does I am who I am mean. Some of them have said that it means self-existent, that God does not depend on anything to exist, which is absolutely true. Some have said that God is a creator. He created all things. He made all things to be, which is exactly true. And somebody has said that God is immutable. He doesn't change. Some have said that God is eternal. He will continue to exist. Some have said that God's all-powerful. And sometimes when you read articles online, you're going to find like 10 definitions of what I am, who I am means. But that's not helpful. Which one of them are correct? I mean, in the sense that all of them are correct. God is eternal. God is all-powerful. God is the creator. But what did God mean when he told Moses and the Israelites, I am who I am? When you look at the word in a vacuum, you're not going to be able to find the answer. But thankfully, Yahweh is not a word we got in a vacuum. There is context to this, and God gave us, he put his name in a context. He gives us an explanation. Exodus chapter 3, verse 15. God said to Moses, you are going to say to the people of Israel, Yahweh, and you're going to have in your Bible, small capital, the Lord. Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. When God revealed his name, he put it in a context. The context is that descriptive phrase about his name, God of your fathers, your Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, for you, for most of us in here, when I looked at it, that doesn't mean anything. I'm going to try to get to it. What does that mean? That means Yahweh is a name of promise. Because why is it not everybody else in that lineage? Why is it Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Because they're all related by a promise, or more specifically, a covenant, something that God has told his people. God has told these three people in particular. It's a promise that he has made, and that's why he's bringing it back to there. And so the next question you ought to ask is, well, what's the promise? What's the promise? This is what he said to Abraham, Genesis chapter 17. He said, I will establish my covenant, my relationship between me and you and your offspring after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant, everlasting promise, everlasting relationship, to be God to you and to your offspring after you. And I'll give to you and to your offspring after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. That's to Abraham. To Isaac, he gave the same promise, but repeated and renewed for him. Isaac is Abraham's descendants. To Isaac, he said, sojourn in this land, and I will be with you, and I will bless you. And then later he said to Jacob, their descendants, to Jacob he said, the land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. In fact, he goes one step further. Even when he told Moses, he repeated some of the same themes. He said, but I will be with you, Moses, and that shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. You bring the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God here. You catch it? What's the promise? The promise is I am with you. Yahweh, I am with you. I am with you. There's a professor of OT studies, Dr. Raymond Abba. He says, it is the assurance of the presence of the Savior God with his covenant people, which is embodied in the name Yahweh. The assurance, the promise of presence. The promise of the presence of God with his people. That's in the name Yahweh. What's so significant about Yahweh? What's the profile, the personality profile, the character? What's that LinkedIn page like? What's that resume? What does Yahweh tell us about God? It means I am with you. It also means past tense. I have been always with you. And it also means future tense. I will be with you always. When God first introduces his name in the pages of his history, he didn't first associate himself with power. He didn't say God the Almighty. He could have definitely said it because he is all-powerful. He didn't associate himself with knowledge either. He didn't say God the all-knowing, even though he is all-knowing. He didn't first associate himself with his infinite nature, God the eternal, though he is. He didn't first associate himself with creation. He is the maker of all things. He didn't say, I am the God of the sun, of the sky, of the moon, of the earth, of everything. He associated himself with you and I. What makes God, Yahweh, unique and different from all the other religions and all the other gods, especially at that time, Egyptians, and then later we have the Greek gods and the Roman gods? These gods, they are unpredictable. They are not connected with the people. You have to win their favor. You have to guess their mood. You have to cast something. You have to give them something so that they can gain favor. Sometimes you read that they run away from humans because they don't like the humans. They get tired of them. They beat them up. They come down. They rape somebody. They have a kid and they kill somebody. The gods of ancient time, it's never associated with being with humans. Only the Israelite God. And so when Moses and Israelites, and the Israelites, they learn of God's name in that time, they would have been absolutely floored. They are amazed and they're in awe because it's unheard of for a God to be with his people. You have only had people trying to be with God. But what's so unfortunate about this is, thousands and thousands and thousands of years later, when it gets to us, sometimes it doesn't mean much. Sometimes it's a little numbing. God with us, God with me, Jesus with you and me. Like, we tune it out. We lost the feeling and the weight of the name. I myself included, I've tuned it out for years. I hear that word, you know, in teaching and in preaching all the time. I tune it out. Until recently, I had an experience that made me just realize how precious it is to have somebody that promised to be with you. I want to tell you a story. This is a story of Fizz and I, shortly during the time when Aslan was born. Fizz is my wife, if you didn't know. Aslan is my kid, obviously. We had him in November. When Fizz went into labor, Aston was a few weeks earlier than expected. So we were pretty unprepared and shocked. And not only that, we expected a natural birth, but then there were some medical complications, there was some emergency going on. And so instead of having a natural birth, Fizz had an emergency C-section. Now, some of you have gone through this, some of you perhaps can imagine this. For first-time parents, it's absolutely frightening. When in 5 minutes, it was all peace and quiet, and then your wife is sort of crying out and trying to get a baby out, and then all of a sudden, there's like 10 doctors, there's like 5 nurses, all needles into your arms and your veins. It was stressful. It was nervous. I didn't know what was going on. And obviously, I couldn't do anything. I just stood there, and I had like my little gown on, and I'm like, I was frightened. Now, it was a smooth surgery. So after, you know, a couple of hours, Aston was born. Things settled down for a little bit. Fizz had obviously a surgery, so she had to bed rest. It was a few days in the hospital I will never forget. In those few days, the hospital room, Fizz and I just had each other. There was so much stuff we didn't know what to do. There's so much unexpected news. We just felt like we had each other, and we lived like a whole movie together. Until then, 5 days or a couple of days later, we finally got discharged, and my brother and Phil's brother, which is Howard, they came to pick us up at the hospital. Pretty late at night, it was 7 p.m., my brother went to grab a dinner takeout for us, and Howard came to help us settle down and to unpack our stuff. And then 15 minutes later, my brother came with dinner. My brother also helped to get things settled, and I remember in particular, my brother helped with lining Aslan's bed with the bed sheets. After an hour or a couple, you know, hour, 2 hours or so, they also had to go. I remember I just absolutely did not want to send my brother out. It's like my dog watching me get out the door. Can you please not go? When he stepped out of the door, he turned around and he said to me, "Bro, if you need anything, call me at any time. I'll be here right away." When I closed the door, I never felt so helpless, so clueless, so uncertain of what to do. I felt like there was a void in my stomach eating away at me. Obviously, there was a bunch of excitement, but I was mainly just lost. I have no clue. Do I try to put the baby to bed? Do I shout? Do I put myself to bed? What is better, sleep? Do I unpack? What about tomorrow? What about eating? I have no idea. So Fizz and I just looked at each other like, what the heck are we supposed to do right now? Baby was crying, but it was so silent and so like, it's just like there's like a void in there. We got through the first night, and then second day, Fizz started to feel sick. She said that she felt that her heart rate is a little bit odd. She felt a bit warm, and so then by late afternoon that day, less than 24 hours after we got discharged, she had a fever. We called our doctor. Doctor said she's unsure of what exactly it could be. It could be anything. And so the doctor said it might be some sort of infection. Worst case scenario, blood infection. And when you tell me blood infection, I have no idea what that is. It sounds horrible. They say you should go to the emergency right away. That pit, that void just ate away at me. And I felt this emptiness and helplessness. Fizz is sick. The baby's crying. She had a surgery. She can't move. I felt a need for me to man up. Be strong, be courageous, to hold everything together. So I try to be calm and be reassured. Do we bring the baby to hospital? Obviously, you have to bring the baby. You can't leave the baby at home. What do we pack? Okay, you got to pack this. You got to pack the diaper. Where is the bag? Where's the formula milk? Where is? Do you need anything? Can I pack you something? Where's my stuff? Do I need my clothes? Where is the car? Do I drive the car to? Where do we go? I've been running on 2 hours sleep each day for the past 5 days, trying to take care of everything and trying to be a man. Man up and take care of all the arrangements while my wife is on the bed. In that moment, I lost it. I fell on my bed and I sat there and I just started crying. What do I do? As we were both crying, I thought maybe we should get help. So I looked at my phone. Okay, 911 is probably not the number to call at this moment. I looked at my phone contact. I thought, who am I supposed to call? There's a bunch of people in my phone, bunch of contacts that I have. I have a bunch of friends, supposedly. I have a bunch of people that I think they will come, but I don't know who to call. Somebody were too far. Somebody might be busy. Some of the friends, I don't think we're close enough. Some of the people, maybe they might not be too helpful. They might feel awkward. Some of them, I didn't even know if they would want to come. It's inconvenient. It's too bothersome. Well, this is just a little thing. But then I remembered. If you need anything at any time, call me and I'll be here right away. So I called him. And all I said was, or all I could say was, bro, can you come? I couldn't explain what was going on. I don't have my voice. My reasoning, my logic is all. I just said, bro, can you come right now? 10 minutes later, my brother came at the door. When he opened the door, I opened the door. He asked me what is happening, and I just became a little brother. I just ran and I just hugged him. I just cried for a few minutes. I've never done anything like this. Since like a kid, probably. But I also never knew how much I needed somebody to be with me until I felt that void, until I felt lonely and alone and helpless and don't know what to do. And what's so interesting about all of this is my brother, he had no idea what he's supposed to do. He's not a medical professional. He hasn't given birth. He hasn't had any of these experiences. But he just came. He helped me carry the bags down. He opened the door, took my keys, locked the door. When we got to the hospital, he helped me bring my stuff in. He helped me pay for the parking. He helped us get water, and then he just waited there with us. I told him, hey, once things get settled down, you should go have your dinner. He hasn't eaten yet. And he said, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'll get you later, don't worry. And he just sat there on his phone for like the next 3 hours. It's only when I find myself to be alone that I realize how much I needed somebody to be with me. How precious it is to have somebody give you the promise, call me and I'll be here anytime. Perhaps some of us had a hospital moment like I did. Maybe it wasn't a literal hospital. Maybe it's a metaphorical hospital. Maybe you have felt that void in you before. Something eating away on the inside and you feel like alone. Perhaps it was that time when you sat in your room, your dorm room. It was the holidays, but you have midterm and exams to study for. And you stopped and you felt, where's my family? I can't call them. There's a time zone difference. And you just stared at the four walls in your room and you just wrote your paper and looked at your textbook with tears coming down your eyes. Maybe it was your birthday. Your parents were away at work. You have a bunch of messages on your phone. Happy birthday, queen. Happy birthday, king. You know, happy birthday, brother. But everybody thought you had somebody. And you ate dinner at home by yourself. You didn't want to call anybody. You didn't want anybody to know. Maybe it was a time you had a tough conversation with your parents. Argument. More than a conversation. And when it ended, you locked yourself in your room. And you thought to yourself, how come nobody understands me? How come nobody hears what I want to say? You looked at your phone, you thought about calling somebody, but Who am I going to call about a fight with my mom? And you just sat there for I don't know how long. Maybe it was the time you went to the clinic. You're waiting for treatment and diagnosis. But this was the first time you ever had to go to a clinic yourself. You don't want to go on your own, but you don't have anybody to call to go with. I'm sure you have lots of people on your phone and Messenger app and DM, Instagram to message. But let's be honest, just because your contact list is long, it doesn't mean you don't feel that void. Just because your contact list is long doesn't mean you don't feel alone. Because people are not always available. They don't always understand. They don't always know. They're not always helpful. But today, may I suggest to you that you add somebody else in your contact. You have a name and you have a number to call. Yahweh is the name. He is closer than your closest friend. He knows you more than your parents. He cares about you more than any of your friends. And he loves you more than your boyfriend and your girlfriend. Because whereas I had my brother, I call my brother and he was here right away. Yahweh says, you don't even have to call me and I am here. I come to you. I called my brother, but he didn't know anything. I have to update him and I don't have the words to. But Yahweh says, you don't have to update me. I know your thoughts before you say a word. I know everything that happens in here. All the negativity, all the thoughts and all the fears that you have said in here. You don't have to tell me. I already know. Whereas my brother, he wasn't able to help much. Yahweh says, I parted the ocean once for the people under my name. I can help you open doors. Whereas my brother, or perhaps your brother or your parents, sometimes they're not always available. They are at work. There's time zone difference. They're all the way across the ocean. Yahweh says, I am here 24/7. I led my people in a pillar of cloud and fire by night. I am always here. Whereas my brother, he gave me a promise and I thank him to death for the promise. But Yahweh says, I swear by my own name, I am with you. That is who I am. I am with you always. Church, I'm not sure how many of you here are right now in that season. You find yourself that void in your stomach. And you feel alone and isolated. I want to invite you, call that number, call the name. Whenever you feel that hole, you call his name. And you ask him to reveal to you that he's already here with you.